My name is Molly Polden, and I was born in Heybridge Basin a long while ago, and I was born in the Old Ship Pub in Heybridge Basin, and my grandmother was the licensee or the landlady, and her husband, my grandfather, was the river pilot, and his son after him and his father before him. My mother was also born in Heybridge Basin in one of the white boarded cottages right on the quay, right on the Loch Hill. And we lived in Heybridge Basin, and I lived in the same bungalow that my mum and dad had built.
When did they have that built?
In 1939. And there were four children, and so I remained there for 66 years, actually. And I went to school in Heybridge. My youngest brother was born in the bungalow. One Monday morning, we were told to run down the canal bank and Mum might have a new baby brother or sister. And that's the first time I ever knew that my mum was pregnant. And she sat up in bed with this baby. And I was supposed to have said, well, wherever you got him from, Mum, take him back because he's ugly. That was pretty horrible of me, but never mind.
I believe you said you were one of just a few families.
Yes.
In Heybridge Basin.
Yes, there were four families in Heybridge Basin. The Woodcrofts, the Clarks, the Janeys, and the Stebbins. And we were the Stebbins. And there were quite a few of them, actually, in the basin, the Stebbins.
And are you still in touch with some of the other families there?
Well, there are very few of them left. There really are very few. There are very few of any of us left. A lot of all my mum's family have gone, her brothers and their family, and a lot of their families too. A lot of my cousins have gone. In fact, we're the only ones left. No, one other left.
Molly, when did you leave school?
I was 14 and a half. I went to the Morden Secondary, and I was 14 and a half. I really had no idea what I was going to do at all. But my headmistress contacted my mum to say that there was a job going on the railway. And did she think that I would be interested? I think I was a little bit more interested in being either a telephonist, which they had in Malden at the time, up in Tenterfield Road, or a children's nanny, because I did love children. And I would wheel anybody's baby out. But anyway, we went off for an interview at Ipswich Station.
You went all the way up to Ipswich?
Yes, had to go down for this interview. And my mum took me, because I hadn't been as far as Ipswich in my life, leave alone on a train. And so off we went, and I had this interview, and I came out. And I remember Mum saying to me, did you get the job? So I said, oh, Mum, I don't know. I've got to wait and find out. So she said, well, if you get it, she said, you take great care of it because you'll get a pension at the end of it. And, of course, I was very indignant indeed, to think I wasn't thinking about pensions at 14 and a half. But believe me, my life wouldn't be quite so good now if I hadn't got that pension.
Did all children leave school at 14 and a half?
Yes, all of us. 14. I stayed on the extra two terms.
Right.
I was 14 in the December, and I left in the summer term.
And in those days, most 14-year-olds were able to find some sort of job.
Yes, yeah, we all found jobs, all of us. And there's still quite a few of them in my class that are alive. One that we started school together and we still see each other. It's quite amazing, really.
So you got the job on the railways. Where did you first start working?
I started at Witham. And I started just before the war ended and went off on the little steam train down to Whittam Goods, not the booking office. I wasn't in the booking office. I was in the goods office the whole of my 31 years. I was there until about 1951. I think it was between 50 and 51. And there was this job going at Malden, which meant that I wouldn't have to travel. And would I like it? So I took it, and I spent some wonderful years at Malden, it really was.
And that was in the goods office as well?
Yes, the goods office.
And what was the work? What did you do in the goods office?
If anybody wanted to send anything anywhere, we would do it.
Right.
We had all anything, just anything. And anything that came in, all the goods that came in, we delivered to the local shops, people.
Oh, I see. Everything that came in by train?
Everything that came in.
Right.
We delivered to people around the countryside. Mm. We had the lorries that went out into the country, out to Purley, out to Mundon. Mm.
And you had to organise that transport?
We had quite a few lorries. We must have had about 6 lorries, I should think. Mm. One female driver who was very well known in town. She was a London girl. But anything that anybody wanted to send anywhere, we would send it. Mm. And like vice versa, it came in and we delivered it.
And where was the goods office in Malden?
It stood right where Costa's is now, where they've built this awful Costa's building.
The new Costa's.
The new Costa's, it's not awful. The big Costa's building. Right. It stood right on the roadway.
Did it?
Yes. And we watched. We were right in the front of it. We had this lovely big window, which looked out over Beeley. We actually watched them blow up the viaduct.
Did you?
From that window. We watched Eddie, whatever it was, who went from one side to the other on his motorbike.
Yes.
We watched him. Mm. Unfortunately, I didn't have much to do with the West, Malden West. I only ever remember going up there about twice on the train with the... with the guard in the guard's van, just for a ride, actually, but not on business. I don't know how I managed it, but I did.
So did you travel much? You know, once you were sort of settled in the goods office, you had no reason to travel on the trains very much?
No. We had free passes.
Did you?
Oh, yes. We had 5 free passes a year and as many reduced as we liked. We had a pass, and they were about a third of the fare. But it didn't go very far, not really.
So from your window in the goods office, you could see the bypass being built and all the changes at that part of Malden.
Yes.
What did you think of it at the time?
Not much. No. To lose the West, was... But then the passenger side closed in 1939 anyway.
Mm.
But we did used to go up there with the goods goods trucks.
How many people were working in the goods office?
Mr. Harris. Everybody was Mr. in those days. No Christian names. Mr. Harris, Mr. Cornish, Mr. Bellhouse. And myself.
So you were the only lady?
I was the only female. And it was never ever occurred to anybody that the only female would like to go to the toilet every now and then. And the nearest one was over on the passenger side. So I had to cross the lines and walk down the platform to the passenger side. But then, of course, I had lots of little chats over there with them, and because they were lovely in the booking office. There was Stan Clark, and a little romance went on there, and he married his partner. She was actually the station master's daughter. And They got married. I used to go over there for little chats and come back again. Mm. And sometimes on my way back, there would be a train wanting to go out or a train wanting to come in. And I would swing the gates over the crossing gates over the road for the signalman, Ambrose Girton. He was lovely. he was a lovely man.
So normally he would come down and do it himself?
Oh, yes, that was his job.
Every time?
Yeah, but he'd say, swing them over, Molly, swing them over. And I'd swing them over, because I was young.
Yeah.
Do anything when you're young. Then when I'd done that, he'd say, come on, come and have a cup of tea. So I went for a cup of tea. It was everything, everybody was, you know, it was a family.
Yeah.
It really was a family. Mm. But I was the only female, apart from that, the one in the passenger, in the booking office, and the girl that drove one of the lorries.
The lorries.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was only just the three of us.
Mm. So how many years were you in the Malden office?
Until they closed it in the 60s.
Right.
And then off we went to Colchester.
That must have been a shock.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Did you know it was coming?
It was a very sad day.
Yeah. Mm. Had you any warning?
Oh, yes. We knew it was coming. Mm. Yes. And we were told that we could have any books or... they didn't clear the office. We could have any books. And so I had one or two of there was a gazetteer, which was a very interesting. Every town, village, hamlet was in this book about that thing. A wonderful little book it was. And that's how we knew where to send, because, I mean, Heybridge Basin wasn't very well known, so if anybody wanted to send anything to Heybridge Basin, he would look up in here, and, of course, the nearest was Malden.
Mm.
Mm. It was a really lovely book. Mm. But no... it was quite a big office, actually. Quite a big office.
It must have been a really sad time.
Oh, it was. Yes, it was.
For a lot of
we
people.
We were all sad. Mm. I don't think many of them came. I think there was only me that went to Colchester. Yes, it was.
And it was roughly what age were you then when you were transferred up to Colchester?
I would have been about... 30, 40, 50, 60, about 40 something.
Your 40s?
Yeah. Must have been. Yeah. Yes, because I celebrated my 40th in a hotel in Colchester, so we were there. I was in my 40th. Mm. I was about 40. Mm.
Mm. So suddenly you had quite a long way to travel.
Yes, but I was driving then.
Right.
So I drove to Colchester.
Yes. And what were your working hours?
I don't remember. I think I just sort of made them up myself.
Yeah.
we didn't have to clock in. You just arrived, and you went home when the work was finished.
Mm. And that was true in Colchester as well.
Yes, it was, because I don't really shouldn't tell you this. I used to leave home about 8:40, not always, but sometimes, to get to Colchester at 8:30, which was my starting time.
The official starting time.
The official starting time. And one morning, I met some friends at Great Wigborough who were waiting for I don't know what, so I stopped to talk to them. That was 20 minutes later, I set off, and I started to say to myself, they will be say something to you this morning, they really will. And I arrived in the office, and I opened the door, and they all looked up. It was a big open plan office. And they looked up and said, Molly went... earth have you been? We've been so worried about you. You thought you'd been had an accident. And that was that. I was never, ever pulled up for my bad timekeeping. Never. I did work. I did love it. And I worked and I worked and I worked.
You must have been a good worker.
I tell myself I was. I must have been. Otherwise, they would have said something to me.
Do you remember how long it actually took you to drive from Heybridge Basin up to Colchester?
About 40 minutes.
40.
Mm.
Yeah.
I used to take the back roads.
And was it still a good job in Colchester, despite the travelling?
It was, I think, probably the best 12 years of the 31. We were even more of a family. It really was Colchester was very special somehow. And sadly, earlier this year, I said goodbye to the last contact with the Colchester Railway. He was the last one to go. And that was very sad indeed.
I'm sure.
Because we kept in touch. He actually came down to Malden to work. And then, because you could apply for jobs and upgrade yourself, which I did from time to time. But he was a bit ambitious and he went back to Colchester. But we always kept in touch, Jim and I. And it was a very sad day to say goodbye to him.
Jim
Mays. And he was a lovely chap. And I was very, very friendly with his family, his wife, and went to his funeral. But no, it was sad to say goodbye to the last one. Going back to Malden, there's a photo in Malden Museum of the staff in the front of the station. A very motley crew. Drivers, signalmen, station master, office staff, and I'm one of them. And I'm the only one left.
Really?
Yes, I've got a picture, I'll show it to you. But I'm the only one left.
Yeah.
And some of them, actually, I can't even name now. But Malden was special in its own way. We used to leave the... again, I was running late. When I was going from Malden to Colchester to Witham, I was cycling at the time, and I would come across the causeway on my bicycle, and late, and the train would be on the crossing, so they'd stop and pick me up, push me on, bicycle as well. And that's where I had my first dancing lessons.
Huh?
7 o'clock in the morning in the guard's van.
Huh?
And the guard taught me to dance, old-time dancing. It really was lovely. It really was, you know, it was so natural.
I find it incredible that as a 14-year-old is suddenly working full-time on the trains, doing a job you'd never done before.
Yeah. I hadn't got a clue.
And that was normal?
No, I knew nothing about railways at all. Then we'd get a little bit further along, and one of the drivers, when he was on, would throw I don't know whether it was his wife or his girlfriend, a bucket of coal, where the houses are now on the bypass. He used to throw into the field a bucket of coal. She'd be standing there waiting. A little further on, we get to Langford, and along would come my chief clerk. He'd be late too. Bicycle under his arm, running across the field. We'd wait for him, put the bicycle on the platform and leave it, pick it up in the evening.
Yeah.
Not locked up.
So the train was often late as well then?
Well, they seem to make up time. Yes, they can make up time, I think.
Yeah.
But it was always between Malden and Langford. You know, because it was a chief clerk in those days. They've got a far different handle now.
Yeah.
Different now.
You must have seen a great variety of trains.
Yes.
The change in trains.
Yes.
So when you first started...
That was the little steam train.
Steam train.
Yes, yes.
And then gradually...
And then we went on to the little... I forget what they called it. It was a motorised one, you know. But they weren't so nice. They weren't so... They weren't... They hadn't got the character.
No.
I still love playing with my... Or helping my friend with his... he's got a model railway,
yes,
which he's made himself.
Yeah.
And I always pick out the one that I went to work on.
And do you still like trains?
I love them.
Going on trains,
I can stand on that railway line at Malden, and I can almost hear a train coming. It's extraordinary, really. But, it was a marvellous 31 years, it really was.
So, when you finally retired, you retired from the Colchester job? What happened at the end of your working life?
Colchester was going to be closed. So we had to go to Ipswich. And I drove down there on the first day, on the Monday morning. I can't believe, can't remember whether I was late. I probably was on time that day. And I stayed a day, and I knew that I couldn't do that every day. So I went back the next day and asked for redundancy. And the station master had a long chat with me. You know, was I quite sure? They were very good. They were good, very good and caring. They really were.
It was because of the long journey. The
yes,
long
because
drive
of the long journey, I knew I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so I just had to, you know, and got redundancy. So that was the end of railway life.
That must have been a sad day as
yes,
well.
Yes, it was. Very sad. Very sad indeed. I can still recall it all, you know, quite clearly how sad it was.
And coming home then back to Heybridge Basin, you were living...
Still living with my dad.
With your dad,
And he died while I was working at this Bolton and Paul.
So you did find another job quite quickly?
Yes, about a fortnight. About a fortnight, 3 weeks, something like that.
At Bolton and Paul.
Bolton and Paul.
And what were you doing there?
Just office work. It was in the time and study department.
Not as good as being on the railways, then?
Oh, no, nothing like that. The people weren't either. I think railway people are a bit of a breed apart, somehow. They were... I don't know. There's something about...
It sounds as if you were, in all in the different places, a really... Well, as you've already said, a really happy family.
We were.
In the different centres where you worked.
We used to have Christmas parties. And I think more so at Colchester, not quite so much at Maldon. We did have get-togethers at Maldon, but not so much at... we had more at Colchester. We had a lot of social life at Colchester. We had a very good station master at the time. We had some lovely station masters, so we used to change station masters quite a lot, because there again, that was they were working their way up. I think at Maldon, while I was at Maldon, we must have had all of five for the years that I was there. The last one was a real worker. The Goldinger Fruit Farms had a big contract with Woolworths, and they supplied them with tinned goods of just about everything, and they all came in to us. And we had to send them all out. And that changed Maldon's life. That really did.
Did it?
That revitalised them. But that wasn't long before it closed. So it was a bit short-lived in a way. But we used to have these lorry loads of cartons of tinned goods.
Right. And they were dispatched.
They
all
were
over
dispatched
the...
all over the country, right, to every Woolworths in the country.
And it was your job.
It was my job
to arrange that.
Arrange it all.
And so the station master, was he the big boss of everybody?
Oh, the station master was the boss of the whole station.
You as well in the goods office, right?
Yes.
So looking back on your railway working life. Obviously full of good memories.
There's not a bad memory amongst them. There really isn't. They were just lovely people. They really were.
That's really good to hear. So now, Molly, you're living in Maldon.
Yes.
When did you move from Heybridge Basin to Maldon?
On the 1st of September, 15 years ago.
15?
And just love it. Although I still say that I am a native of Heybridge Basin, born and bred. I'm very proud of it.
Good.
Very proud of it.
Molly, can we go back to your family history? I understand that your father was on Ozzy Island in the First World War.
Yes, that's right. The Navy were on Ozzy for, I think, about 20 months. Something like coming up to 2 years. And there were several thousand on the island, including wrens. And I didn't know they had wrens in the First World War, but they did. But obviously Dad was quite young then, and it was a base for small submarines, which actually played quite a big part in the First World War. They used to go up to Norway. I don't know what they did. I had a book on Ozzy, a small book, and a lot of memorabilia about what the Navy did. And I lent it to somebody, and obviously, as you can tell, I didn't ever get it back again.
Did your father go out on submarines?
No. Not to my knowledge. He never spoke about it very much, which is quite sad, really. Whether he was a stoker in the Navy, finished up as a petty officer, which he did quite well, really. But as a young man, he was a stoker. So whether he left the island or not, I really don't know. Anyway, they were all on Ozzy Island, and he met my mum. Mm. Who was in service on the island.
Oh.
And as I said before, her mother kept the old ship pub in which I was born. So they met and they married.
Did they marry during the war or after the war?
Oh, during the war.
During the war.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. It was a very sad marriage, actually, because Granddad didn't want them to get married because Dad was 10 years older than Mum. She was a mere 20 and he was 30. So he didn't want them to get married. And so it was a sad marriage because on the morning of the wedding, he apparently, and we didn't know this until after Mum died, that he sat outside the bedroom door with his shotgun and wouldn't let her out. And they took her out of the front bedroom window.
No.
Some friends, the friends who told us.
Oh,
and so they went up to Heybridge Church, where there was the vicar, Mum and Dad, two cousins as sponsors or whatever. And that was all. There wasn't a photo or anything. But they were married in St Andrew's Church.
And did you ever find out if Grandad forgave them?
No, I didn't actually. No, I didn't. I actually didn't know Grandad. I never ever met him. He died before I was... Whether I was very small, I think he died in 31, and I was born in 29. So he was quite young.
But your parents had a long, happy marriage.
Well, they did. Although Mum died when she was 63, and Dad went on till he was 80-odd. So they did, but she was so looking forward to having her golden wedding, which obviously she didn't. She died of cancer.
Yeah.
So, but the Navy were on there, as I say, for about coming up 2 years. And then he went off and he was in the early 30s. They were sent off to Malta.
Right.
And he was allowed to take, for Mum and my sister and I to go. So Mum, at about 25, who'd been... no further than Chelmsford in her life, took two little girls off to Malta on a boat. I don't know where they went from. I have got a newspaper about 1935, I think it is, when we left Malta, and it was written up in the paper, in this big daily paper, Maltese, that Mrs. Ivy Polden and Elizabeth Polden and Molly Polden were leaving for England on that day. And I've still got that newspaper.
Do you remember anything about Malta?
Not a thing. My sister does. Remembers a lot. She actually went back before me and found the house where we lived and was welcomed with open arms and went down the road to the little baker's shop where every Sunday people used to take their meat, their joint of meat, and the baker would cook it for you. And that was still there 50 years later.
Really? Yeah.
Very much updated, but still doing the same thing. So, yes, that was... But I always think Mum was very brave.
Absolutely. Big adventure for her, wasn't
Born
it?
In the, you know,
Absolutely.
And never been anywhere in her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she had a whale of a time.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a good...
Going forward a little bit to your younger days at the Basin, I gather you played in the water a lot, you swam a lot.
Yes.
And you ventured over to Northey Island?
Oh, to Northey, yes. We used to go, lots and lots of times we went, when the tide was right, because obviously it had to be low, and we would put our swimming costumes on, no shoes, and we would go through the mud and the shingle. We knew the route to take, actually. We knew how to avoid a lot of mud, because there's quite a lot of shingle as well. And we would go over to Northey Island and play in the creeks in the mud, smothering ourselves from top to toe with mud. And then when we all had a jolly good time and were probably tired out, come back, and in the middle there was just about 6 foot of water where we could wash ourselves off and then come back. And there was quite a lot of us went. Sadly, the cousins that used to come with us have died. All of Mum's brothers and sisters' family have died. I think we've got about two left on that side.
What an amazing playground you had.
Oh, it was. It really was wonderful.
So you all learnt to swim at a very early age?
Yes, yes, very early age. Mum was a good swimmer. Dad was a good swimmer. So we were all
And Mum didn't worry about you?
No, she didn't.
As you were all together,
presumably? No, she didn't. No. No, there didn't seem to be any reason why we shouldn't. You know, it was just something that we did and did regularly.
Yeah.
And we always needed a swim when it was low tide. So that was another thing, to, you know, to make us to want to go. Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to jump forward again to the days that you were working in Malden at the goods office. Would you like to tell me about your friend from Purley?
Yes, my friend Miss Whitnell. She was always Miss
Whitnell.
Whitnell. Whitnell. Miss Whitnell. She was a character and she was so lovely. We loved her when she used to come down to the station with her bags of manure.
Bags of manure?
Manure. Small bags of manure they were. Not very big. I don't know what sort of manure it was, whether it was from her sheep, because she had a small flock of sheep, which a few years ago I was speaking to somebody, and the strain is still there in Purley. But she had this big old red brick house in Purley on Howe Green, and a bit of land the other side of the road. And she lived for these animals, she really did. She had them in the kitchen with her when they were poorly. And as I say, she just gathered this manure from somewhere or other and advertised it. And then she would bag it up and bring it up and send it all over the country.
Really?
Yes. So I don't know how she advertised it, because there was certainly nothing like television. Anyway, she did. And I can remember one day I was in town, and it was when you could park outside the Meldune Centre, and she parked her car and couldn't get it started. And she got these bags of manure. The chickens actually lived in the car as well.
The chickens lived
yes.
in the car.
Oh, yes, the chickens lived in the car. And she couldn't get the start. She saw me and she said, could you give me a push, dear? She spoke very well, actually. And she wanted to go down the hill, you see. So there was me pushing this car and her, and it suddenly sprang into life. And she said, goodbye, dear. And off she was, went down the hill. Sadly, poor Miss Whitnell was knocked off her bicycle over at Howe Green. She was on her bike. And she was killed.
Ooh.
And it was a very, very sad day for us. It really was. Going back to the bags of manure, I had to be the one, unfortunately, to tell her that we couldn't send any more until she paid her bill. And she just couldn't. So she really was down on her uppers. But she was a very generous lady. What she got, she gave. I can still picture her now, I really can. She was tall, grey hair, thin. An old mat tied up with string. we just loved her, we really did.
So she bought the bags of manure down to the goods office?
Yes, and we
Hopefully
sent them off.
Hopefully you didn't have to have them inside.
No.
And then it was arranged that they went on the train.
On the, they went off
to,
on the goods
dispatched.
Train.
To be dispatched, yes. Mm.
Not the passenger train, the goods train.
No.
Mm. Yeah. No, she had quite a good little service going there. She really did.
Mm.
But she just ran out of money.
Mm.
I think she had people sort of dropping in on her and she gathered them in, whether they were strangers or not. She was one of those. They don't make them like that any longer. Mm. They really don't.
Do you know what happened to her little farm after her death?
Well, it was sold after her death, and I understand a distant cousin from nowhere inherited everything.
Right.
And to my anger, I would say, they never, ever marked her grave up in Purley Churchyard. There was never, ever a little cross. I knew roughly where she was because I went to her funeral. And I used to go up there and I'd talk to her. And I would say, and I used to say, one of these days, Miss Whitnell, I will mark your grave. I will put your name on this grave. And I think it was something like 30 years before I finally decided. I was quite friendly at the time through my organ playing with all the undertakers. And I knew the man at Smith's, Andrew. So I went to see him and I said, Andrew, do you think you would make me a little cross with this little plaque on? He said, yes, of course I will. That was done in no time. I then went to the church warden at Purley to find out exactly where she was. And I, as I say, I knew roughly where she was. And we found that, we marked it. Then I went to the vicar, Lady Vicar, and I asked her if she would just say a few prayers for me while we... And I took a few bulbs and things, and there were about a dozen of us. There was only one other lady that actually knew her. And she came as well. And we had this lovely little 5-10 minutes of prayer. And so it was the grave was finally marked. And so I still go up there and every now and then and just have a little word. But, oh, she was a lovely lady. My mum was very upset. I was sad that I didn't do it when my mum was alive, but I didn't. You keep putting these things off, don't you? But whoever benefited from Miss Whitnell benefited very well, because there's a mini mansion on her plot now. The house was demolished,
right.
And there's a mini mansion.
Mm.
What happened to the bit over the road, I don't know. But no,
that's a lovely story.
Miss Whitnell was lovely.
Yeah.
She was really lovely. Mm. And she was always Miss Whitnell.
Yes.
Mm. Never Sybil. I liked those days where you weren't quite so familiar with that sort of person.
Quite a lot of respect, yeah. You mentioned that you were church organist.
Yes, at a very early, very, very early age, 13 and a half I was. We've got this little church at Heybridge Base in St George's, which my mother always worshipped for many, many, many years. My mum was at St George's. And the organist, unfortunately, had to go to hospital. So they asked me if I would play, because I was playing the piano at the time. And, of course, at 13 and a half, and I wasn't going on 33 and a half either. And didn't know a him from a her. Anyway, I did know a few, and so I was taken on, and I played there till I was about 19. Mm. I wanted to give it up, but my mother said no. So I said, right, well, I'll wait till I'm 21, then I'll give up. But I never did.
What sort of organ was it?
Well, it was a little harmonium,
yeah,
where you pump with your feet and play with your hands. And it is a service every Sunday afternoon of Evensong. There was usually a good little congregation, and I loved it. I really did. But in the meantime, at 17, I started to go to Heybridge Church, and so I went on to the pipe organ.
Ooh.
Going back to the harmonium, one Sunday afternoon, a lay reader who was my headmaster when I was at Heybridge School, primary school, Mr. Gibbons, horrible man, he came down to take service. And I had already chosen the hymns, it was already everything, and he said that he would like this particular hymn that he wanted. And I said, okay, all right. Well, I had never played it, I'd never seen it, and I didn't know it. And I made a mess of it. And I really did make a mess of it. And he came over, all in the middle of the service, and he said, I'll do it. But I had the last laugh, because he couldn't pedal his feet and play at the same time. So he made an even worse hash than I did. I can't remember how it all finished, I really can't. But I never forgave that man for that. That was an awful thing to do to a 14-year-old.
Yes. Yeah.
It really was. But anyway, I went off up to Heybridge, and before I knew where I was learning to play the pipe organ.
That was a big change, wasn't
it?
Oh,
yes, yes. But I loved it.
You did?
I really did love it, yes. And I played there for 70 years.
70 years. At the same church?
At the same church. And in the meantime, I was... And particularly at the end, when I wasn't doing it sort of full-time, we had another organist by that time, and she was doing two Sundays, and I did two Sundays. So on my two Sundays, I was either in the choir or playing at some other church, and so I played at the Methodist, the Roman Catholic, St Mary's, United Reform, Baptist... I've played so many organs.
Why did you decide to give up, to stop?
Because I was 80. And right. There's a time in life when you must give up. Particularly the Church of England, were then, they've now decided to have musical directors. And it's very highbrow. You're getting very highbrow. We've got an organist now who is a very, very good organist, but he's not a church organist. He really isn't a church organist. One day I will tell him, I think. He's only interested in what noise he can make, how much volume he can... He's a noisy... Anyway... The ones that I really loved were probably, I think, the best organ in Malden is the Roman Catholic.
Oh.
I loved the Roman Catholic. Mm. I used to play for their funerals and weddings mostly. The Baptist is a nice one. Methodist is a nice one. Didn't quite like the United Reform.
Are they all pipe organs?
Old pipe.
Yeah. Mm.
But my claim to fame is I played in Canterbury Cathedral.
No, I did you?
Yeah, but not, I hasten to add, the biggest one. One down in the crypt.
Oh.
Which was a three manual electronic. Mm. Yeah, down in the crypt.
And how did that happen?
We went for the day when the Reverend Trellis was with us. He was a black vicar. And we went for the day to Canterbury. But he arranged that we started off with a Eucharist. And so we went, this coachload went down into the crypt. And I played the organ.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And I also played it in Saffron Walden.
Did you?
Which was for a Roman Catholic priest who was once in Malden. He died and went off to Saffron Walden and died. And I was asked if I'd play for his funeral.
Mm.
And in between Malden and Saffron Walden in the car, Father Martin said to me, "Molly, the funeral is in Saffron Walden Church." I said, "The what?" Thinking that I was going to his little church in Saffron Walden.
Yeah.
I said, "The what?" He said, "Saffron Walden Church." I said, "Well, I think you better drop me off here and I'll go home." He said, "Oh, you can't do that." So anyway, it was wonderful. It was wonderful.
So that church is a very big church?
It was going to be the cathedral, the Chelmsford Cathedral.
Oh.
It was a choice between Chelmsford and Saffron Walden.
Right, okay.
And Chelmsford. It was made Chelmsford.
Yeah.
It's an enormous church. And it was right up in the dome, more or less. Three manuals. I had 40 minutes to sort of sort it out to see what I'd got. Because with the Catholics, if you don't play, they don't sing. Because they don't announce. They don't announce anything. You just get on with it. You have a... So I suddenly looked through the railings down at the west door, and there was the coffin, and about 30 white-robed priests. And I thought, what on earth am I doing here? And I sort of stopped, and I knew that I'd got to start, and I said, "Please, God," I said a few arrow prayers up, "see me through this." And it was wonderful. After the first hymn, it was announced that the MP was there, the bishop was there, and I thought, this is happening to me. And it really was. It was quite wonderful.
Wonderful.
But I've played for some very, very simple funerals.
Yeah.
One was a little baby, and there was just a vicar and me and the mum and dad. That was in St. George's at Hebish Base, and that was very sad. Little stillborn. No, we didn't sing. I just played very quietly.
Yeah.
And he just taught. I've played for one of the Methodists, which I'll always remember, when the lady came in. I don't know whether she was the wife. She must have been the wife, I think. She cried, and she cried very loudly. Very, very loudly. And she didn't stop. Then we had this little pause where we were going to listen to some music. So the music was put on, and it came over. "You're gonna hang out the washing on the Siegfried line." Oh, dear. People say to me, "I should write a book." Yes, I should write a book.
You had some.
But my very last one was Christmas morning when I was 80, and it was up at Woodham Mortimer Church. And that was the very last time I played.
Was it?
And I made it quite clear that I didn't want to be asked, please. And I never was. Because, as I say, there is a time in life when you have to face up to the fact that you're not as good as you were. Or nobody ever told me, but I thought that.
You sensed it, yeah.
But I didn't want to be that little old lady that was sitting, you know, playing the organ. Little white-haired lady.
But you can look back on wonderful experiences and memories.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Do you still play?
No.
You finished completely?
Yes. Very, very occasionally I'll have a little, but only very occasionally. I really should play it more than that I do, but I don't.
No.
Doesn't seem to be time.
in your busy life.
I know.
That's lovely. Thank you, Molly.